You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
You may hear some stuff in the background today. That's because we're doing another live podcast. We are here at the cigar shop, incoming, chilling on the patio out here with the nice weather and the crickets keeping us company.
Yeah, man. You can't ask for a better time of year, man. I love these, you know, cooler nights. The humidity's not at 1,000. Like,
yeah, the last time we recorded here, it was December, so it was a little cold to be out here hanging out, but it's perfect weather. I mean, sipping on a beer and just chilling. So what are we smoking this week?
We are smoking the AJ Fernandez Enclave.
Yeah, I mean, AJ Fernandez makes some damn good cigars. We've talked about the New World before on a previous podcast, and this is their latest creation. I mean, brand new. It's only been out a week or two, and it's just as good as the New World, if not bad. I think it's a little
bit
more.
You know what? I think I'm digging this one a little bit more because it's definitely full flavor.
Yeah, it's a little stronger than the New World. Plus, it's a little bit bigger, and I like, you know, to have a smoke that's going to take an hour of my time.
Absolutely. Yeah, here we've got the Rich Habano Rosado wrapper from Ecuador, a Cameroon binder, and then Nicaraguan fillers and Nicaraguan Joe.
The AJ Fuentes Piloto Cubana and select Nicaraguan fillers.
Yeah, next time I do a trip to Nicaragua, I'm definitely making you tag along.
Damn right. I'll go to Nicaragua with you. Yeah, this like I said, it's got notes of pepper and spice, which I always dig, and that's, you know, what you get with that Habano wrapper. But, you know, I love Maduros, but that Habano wrapper is starting to become my new favorite.
I'm really starting to dig it now that, you know, I've gotten a few more Habanos under my belt, and I mean, this is such a complex full-bodied blend here that, I mean, it's pairing very nicely with the beer. And just as a precursor, we are drinking a very limited edition, probably one of the first people to be able to consume this beer, so make sure you stick around for beer 30.
Yeah, that's pretty much why we're recording this live show, because we couldn't get this beer in stores, so we had to come here to get the beer, so we're like, hell, might as well record everything while we're here.
Absolutely, so I'm also digging the artwork here. I mean, you kind of have like the Old West Native American style theme going on the label here, and you know,
yeah, they definitely do some cool artwork on their labels. I mean, it's really something that will look cool on your wall if you're one of those people that like to frame up their wrappers and such. And there's definitely, like I said, pepper and spice, but also like a little bit of cedar and cinnamon notes as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I can't say enough good things about the cigar outside of I want to shut up talking about it and continue smoking it. And
with most of the, like I said, the price point on it's pretty good too. I think these are like $7.30, $7.70. The for being one of the, I think of like the New World got Cigar of the Year last year, but it's a reasonably priced cigar. It's not something that's going to break your bank. That's probably why they, like, you know, go off the shelf pretty quick, is because it's a, you know, one of the best cigars, and like I said, it's very affordable.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a great cigar. I mean, I wouldn't mind having a box of these in the humidor for, you know, an everyday or weekend smoke. So.
And since we are hanging out smoking, this week's episode is, like, so when we talked about Fast and the Furious, that was like something Brad was like really passionate about wanting to do. And this right here is probably one of my absolute favorite movies from back in high school days. This week's episode is all about Bad Boys, so stay tuned.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do?
you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? When you were 8 and you had bad traits, you go to school and learn the golden rule. So why are you acting like a bloody fool? If you get hot, then you must get cool. Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
And welcome back to the show. You ready to talk some bad boys, Brad?
Yeah, dude, you know it's weird. You've been texting me, bad boys, what you gonna do, and you can't remember the rest of the fucking song.
Hey, that goes along with the movie. Martin only knows the,
I don't think it's just a Martin thing, dude. Like, I don't think any of us know all the lyrics of that song.
All I remember is what they play on Cops every week. Sugar drum drum man come for you. I mean, that's about the only other line I remember.
Isn't that the only lines? I don't know, man.
I don't know. It's been a while. I mean, I used to have the bass mix of this song back in high school and stuff when I was rocking, like, the 15-inch speakers in my car. And every time I'd pull up to a red light when there was, like, a cop next to me, I would, like, have to, like, play it. Just bad boys, bad boys.
And if you pull up next to the, fuck the police or anything, you know?
No, let's play the bad boys thing. And if you pull up next to a motorcycle cop, you got to play the Chips theme. That amuses the hell out of them, too. That's the only reason why that's on my iPod. Just for evil shenanigans.
Must be prepared at all times. All right, so here we are. We're going to jump into it. Bad Boys, 1995, produced by Don Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer.
Directed by a little-known director at the time, Michael Bay.
Yeah. This is back when Michael Bay, there was accountability and people could keep him under control.
Well, that's the thing was, this movie was so... I mean, it revolutionized the buddy cop...
Oh, yeah, dude.
...movies, because, I mean, before this movie, there's certain stereotypes you do when you're doing a buddy cop movie. Usually, they've got to be different in some way. There's, like I said, either so you go back to Lethal Weapon, the old cop versus the young cop, or the experienced cop with the rookie, or you know, and they always, like, usually don't get along at the start of the film, and then eventually learn to respect and work with each other.
Well, I think, you know, the course of life events brings them closer together, like, oh shit, we both almost lost our lives, like...
Yeah.
We're even at this point, we both survived.
But with this, the rich cop versus the rich playboy cop versus the family man average cop. But also the twist on it was these guys were brothers from the start. I mean, these guys went to high school together and stuff. They were friends right from the get-go. There was no having to come together.
Yeah, I mean, they were always friends, and then, you know, later on in their cop careers, they become partners.
Yeah, and like I said, in this movie, these are guys, you know, most of these buddy cop movies, it's two guys thrown together in the midst of this thing, but these were guys that had been working together for years and years. And I think that's one of the things I liked about it, too, was because they talk to each other like me and my friends talk to each other. I mean, like, they spend the whole movie, when they're not doing cop stuff, giving each other shit and busting balls.
No, they're giving each other shit and busting balls they're doing cop stuff.
Yes.
I mean, that creates such a distraction. I mean, you see that in, like, one of the first opening scenes, right? They go to hijack, you know, Mike's Porsche or whatever, and like, nah, dude, you fucked up. You made the worst mistake ever. Like, no, motherfucker, if we weren't in this flashy-ass Porsche, our asses wouldn't be in this predicament.
Yeah, I mean, like, Martin drops... food in
French
the car,
fries,
and
yeah.
He's like, and I swear, me and Mike has had that exact conversation, because he used to drive a little two-door sports car, and that whole conversation, you're like, man, you spent $70,000 for this car, and got no cup holders? What is a shiny dick with wheels? We're just the balls dragging the fuck along. I mean, we've had that conversation.
Yeah, it's just awesome, the dynamics there, and I mean, that's what I think made this movie real, is... Yeah. You know, it's like your best friend. Your best friend comes over. They don't ask, hey, you got any food? No, they go and make themselves a fucking sandwich, open your $200 bottle of bourbon, and start chugging. And it's just to be expected.
That's how you do. It's like the thing meme I read the other day. It was like, there's between friends and best friends. You know, friends come over and it's like, oh, I'm so happy. I haven't seen you in forever. Best friends come over and are like, hey, fuck you. I'm going to go steal your food and play with your dog.
Damn. That is true. You come over and you steal the damn dogs.
Exactly.
You asshole.
But if, like I said, if you've not seen the first Bad Boys, what are you doing with your life? Turn off this podcast right now and go watch that and then come back. But this was, like I said, just a quick synopsis. Martin Lawrence and Will Smith are Miami PD drug cops, and someone actually breaks into the police department evidence lab and steals like $100 million worth of heroin, and then they spend the rest of the movie trying to get back their drugs and get revenge on one of the only movies I remember with a French bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, it Fuqua,
or whatever his name was.
Hey, you got 5 days, otherwise we're shutting your department down.
Yeah. But, like I said, this movie, it was... Not only was it, like I said, Michael Bay to this point. I mean, everybody knows Michael Bay now as, like, Transformers, insane action, over-the-top, weird stuff. But back in the day, this was his first movie. Like I said, before that, he had been a music video director. He had directed a couple... Vanilla Ice videos. And one Playboy Centerfold video. So... Yeah, that was pretty much all Michael Bay had done up to this point, and then they turn him loose on this crazy cop epic.
Yeah, I can't say they necessarily turn him loose, knowing what I know about Michael Bay today. they guided him into a successful franchise.
And that was the thing, you know, before Don Simpson died, when it was him and Bruckheimer together, he kind of kept it anchored, so it wasn't the insane Michael Bay antics you get now.
Which we will get into a little bit later.
Yeah. And you know, like I said, he had a great run there when he was working with Simpson and Bruckheimer. I mean, after this, his next movie was The Rock and Armageddon, which those are, like, three of the greatest, like, you know, late 90s movies. But it's funny because Michael Bay has a tendency to do the same shots in every movie. You're guaranteed to get the 360 wraparound shot. You're guaranteed to get a low angle shot of something with a plane or helicopter or something flying over. You saw that in The Rock. Like, every movie, that shot is in it. So all these things, you know...
Dude, it's called branding.
Yeah. So all these things, you know, that you're watching, if you hadn't even looked to see what the director was, you're like, oh, that's a Michael Bay thing. They all start in this film. Like, so without Bad Boys, we don't get Transformers.
Or Megan Fox.
Damn right. And not only was this, like, a huge impact on Michael Bay's career, at this point, Will Smith and Martin Lawrence were not huge actors. Both of them were TV... Well, Martin was a comedian. He, at the time this came out, he had the Martin Lawrence show. And Will Smith was still doing Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I mean, other than that, he had done, some supporting, like, you know, the best friend role in a couple comedy movies, but this was his first starring role. So without Bad Boys, we don't get eventually Independence Day or help Suicide Squad. And like I said, yeah, this is the movie that turned Will Smith into a viable leading man, action star, you know, type dude.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was such an awesome duo too. I mean, you had Will Smith, he's a little bit more calm and collected. Yeah, he gets himself in some, you know, wicked shenanigans, but at the same time, he always prevails out on top. And you got Martin Lawrence, who, for all intent and purposes, is just like, man, I just want to keep my wife happy, make sure my kids are fed. Like, I got responsibilities.
Yeah, Martin Lawrence is definitely the Murtaugh in this movie. If you compare it to Lethal Weapon, like the originator of the buddy cop movie. Yeah, Martin Lawrence is definitely Murtaugh. He's the one that's like, I'm getting too old for this shit. But he's not that old. He's just like, you freaking Mike's always getting me in trouble and shit.
And, I mean, this set the stage, too. I mean, there were so many great quotes that came out of this movie, memorable moments, and I forgot how influential this film was and how fun it is to sit down and watch again. I mean, dude, this film... nearly 20 years old, and dude, it's still up there with some of the all-time greatest films, in my opinion, there are.
Yeah, I mean, that was one reason when I wanted to do this, because like I said, this is something that's always been one of my favorite movies, and I didn't realize it until I started looking. I'm like, oh shit, this is 20 freaking years old. This came out when I was in high school. I'm like, we're getting old, buddy.
Dude, it's proven fact. Like, before long, we're going to be pushing each other around in hover rounds and have canes, and we're going to be shaking our fist in anger and stuff.
My wheelchair is going to have spinners on it, though.
I mean, you have a wheelchair. I'm going to get me one of those stair thingies that I just sit down, and it takes me up and down the stairs, and it's going to be pretty epic. I'm going to start charging $5 admissions to go on the theme park ride.
Another thing about this movie, I mean, it was also big on, like, Miami culture. I mean, that's something... It was all shot on location down there in Florida, and it just is a... Not only is it a good film, it's a well-shot film. I mean, it's beautiful, the way they, you know, they did everything in it. I mean, it just looks amazing. And there's also that twist, if you haven't seen it, this was also Taya Leone's first big movie. I mean, she went on to be a pretty big actress, but she... Will Smith's ex-girlfriend, friend, informant gets murdered by these drug guys, and her friend...
Mr. Dominguez.
Her friend is the only witness, and she's like, I'll only talk to...
Mike Lowry.
Mike Lowry, who is Will Smith's character, but they can't find Will at the moment, so...
Is that like a little Wayne ripoff?
Maybe. So, you know, Martin Lawrence's character, Marcus Burnett, has to pretend to be Will Smith's character, so it's not only we're getting like the buddy cop thing, we're getting that weird... You know, fish out of water story, because now he's having to pretend to be the rich playboy, and Will's having to play to be
everything at home, and
is having
that's
to
awesome.
Pretend to be him, and like I said, and hilarity ensues.
Yes, yeah, I think you know one of the funnest moments is you know where the girls all like, man, you must be gay, like all these gunfights and everything else. I mean, you're not just feeling a little aroused, and he's like. You know, trying to get himself out of that predicament, and
that and too, since he's like staying in Lowry's house, there's all these pictures of Will Smith on the wall. So he's like, "Oh no, these are just from this."
That's
my
what
boyfriend.
Cops do. We got shrines.
Yeah, I got a picture for every time he's saved my life,
and vice versa. You know, if you go to his house, it's all Mike Lowry.
Yeah, I mean the whole dynamic of him trying to be Will is like, everybody want to be like Mike.
Yes. And, you know, that also leaves a lot of room because of the shenanigans for Captain Howard and his role.
Joe Pantalone, Joey Pants as people call him. He played their, you know, captain who has to deal with their shenanigans. And one thing cool about his character is, like I said, we're always pay attention to cigar movies, and I forgot how many cigars are in this movie until I went back and watched it again, because he, like, you know, the captain is, like, smoking a cigar through the whole... There's even one scene where they come to see him, and he's working out in the gym playing basketball with his freaking stogie.
He's over there practicing, you know, free throws with his damn stogie, like, nah, guys, I was making every shot before you two motherfuckers showed up.
And that was the thing. That's something that he brought to the character, because, I mean, he shows up on set smoking a cigar because everyone knows he's, like, one of the bigger celebrity cigar smokers. And they're like, that's cool. You should smoke a cigar in the movie. And he's like, well, I only brought three, and we've got, like, you know, 5 weeks of shooting. So he had to call,
Oh, it is now LaGuardia.
Ernesto Perez Carlillo of El Credito Cigars, who also has the La Gloria Cubana series. He's like, hey, man, I'm smoking these El Rico Habano Robustos. Can you send me a couple boxes to put in the movie? And they're like, hell yeah. So, yeah, like pretty much like every time you see his character, he is like smoking a cigar through the whole thing.
That's because he's a badass, Joe. You know, you automatically get like 10 badass points just for having a stogie. I mean,
yeah. And I mean, like I said, he's responsible. I heard an interview with, I can't remember his name. It was one of the big cigar company guys, but he's like pretty much, before he got into the cigar industry, he was a doorman at some fancy hotel, and they happened to be shooting a movie there, and the guy, you know, freaking Joey's there, and he's like, you smoke cigars? He's like, sure, which he really didn't. So he's like, here, we'll try. And, yeah, I think he gave him like a freaking diamond, like crown max, you know, one of the, you know, high end cigars. And then, you know, on down the road, he's like, I got to start a cigar label. And now, you know, he's responsible for at least one brand being being made by introducing this guy to cigars.
Hell's yeah.
And like I said, this was a cheap movie at the time. It only cost $19 million to make because, like I said, new director, new actors. But it made $141 million. I mean, this was a big success of a movie.
Yeah, I mean, this, surprisingly, you know, a lot of folks didn't have really high expectations for this film, and I think it exceeded, you know, just about everybody's expectations as far as, you know, what the film grossed and just how memorable it's been throughout the years.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's like, there's no action movie or cop movie fan that does not quote Bad Boys at some point. And like I said, and this, like I said, led to other great films like The Rock and Independence Day, and like made both of these guys a big Hollywood stars at the time.
I think it, you know, kind of set the stage for some of the more modern movies like 21 Jump Street, Hot Fuzz, Rush Hour, you know, some of that type of stuff that I don't think necessarily would have transpired had it not been for the success of Bad Boys.
Yeah, because I mean, at this, you know, before then, you really never saw the funny buddy cop movie. I mean, this definitely.
Yeah, I mean, you had like the Sherlock Holmes and stuff like that, where it was, you know, pretty much all serious, and you know, Dear Watson.
Yeah, these guys are, you know, stressed out, you know, having to deal with some serious stuff. You know, like I said, most of your, you know, even your buddy cop movies at the time really, you know, dealt with like the struggle and stuff. But this was probably the inventor of the action comedy. I mean, because Lethal Weapon, it's funny, but it's mainly an action movie. And this was a movie that kind of put the comedy first. And one of the things that made it so hilarious was all the improv in the movie. Because apparently Michael Bay didn't really like the script that much, so he kept encouraging, you know, Will and Martin to you know, do what they wanted. And I think that made it, like, vastly...
Yeah, I mean, it made it seem much more real and personable. You know, I think it's funny going back to, you know, where, you know, Marcus is basically having to try to, you know, play the role of Mike. And, you know, Julie brings over her dogs, you know, and they start, you know, I think one of them's name was Dookie or something.
Yeah, Dookie and Lukey
or something like that. And, you know, Mike's like, what? There's a hooker at my house and there's dogs in my house? Like,
yeah. That when he comes in and like the dog is just like puked on the rug, and he's like, you can't say anything about it because he'll give it away. And he's like, oh, because ain't my, I would be pissed off about that. He's like, oh yeah, I'm gonna get a new carpet anyway. It's all good.
Yeah, we just throw these things out, you know. I mean, we don't even bother having them cleaned. That's how we roll. Like, like, motherfucker. And then you see, you know, it pans over to where Mike's at Marcus's family house. Like, man, you wouldn't last, you know, 2 seconds with my family. And they're, like, over there going through, like, the yearbook. And you see the picture of Marcus with his big-ass fro and braces and all of that stuff. And, you know, like, just Mike and Marcus's wife just giving him so much shit. Like,
I like, too, when he gets in trouble with his wife because they can't tell her what's going on. So... He's all
this
like,
this whole time Marcus is supposed to be out of town on like some kind of trip.
Well, like, she comes in, he doesn't have his wedding ring on, so he has to sleep on the couch. He's like, I got in trouble last night, man. I woke up with a Power Ranger stuck in my ass. Having to sleep on the couch. And speaking of like the improv scenes, I mean, some of my favorite scenes in the movie were improv, like the scene where they're in the car and Will Smith starts making fun of his driving stuff because Michael Bay apparently like, hey, call Martin a bitch. And so Martin had no idea that like it was coming. So he's like, man, you drive like a bitch. You're driving like Miss Daisy. He's like, oh, I'll drive us off in the ocean. We just be two bitches in the sea then. How you going to feel about that? My wife knows I ain't no bitch. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
And then the scene later where they're, which is probably one of my absolute favorite scenes in this first movie, is when they're in the liquor store after they just had this big shootout at Club Hell. And trying to pick up some stuff, and this Pakistani clerk behind the counter sees they're carrying guns, thinks they're gangbangers, and he's like, freeze, bitch!
And then another argument ensues.
Yeah.
Man, Mike, I can't even come to a fucking convenience store and buy some fucking food without us asses, like, nearly getting shot. Like,
freeze, mother bitches!
And it's funny too, because they're like, no, we're cops. Look, I'm gonna reach in here, and I'm gonna get my badge, and the guy's like, man, that shit's fake. I got badges right here, and just holds up like 50 counterfeit badges.
You want the badges, mother bitch? I sell you badges, 99 cents. And then when he finally's like, freeze, and they're like, no, you freeze, bitch. Put the gun down, back away. Give me a pack of Fruity Delicious bubble gum. Yeah, and some Skittles. But yeah, that whole scene was like pretty much improv. And like I said, it's cool when I went back, you know, doing the research, how much of the movie was you know, something that they came up with on the spot, and they just let the, you know, those two guys, you know, play, and it definitely made their relationship more realistic, I think. Because I think that's one of the reasons why I love that movie so much, is because it, they talk so much like me and my friends would talk.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, fuck. That's you and I in a nutshell.
Yeah, we just need a portion. Yeah.
Oh, we got more that, guns. Yo. You don't even know.
Well, and then, like I said, another reason why we want to do this episode is because they've just recently announced that they're supposedly doing Bad Boys 3 and 4. I know Martin Lawrence has signed on. Don't really have a confirmation on Will Smith yet, but, I mean, it's, if they can't get them both back together, it's not worth doing, I don't think. But, yeah, that's something that I've always wanted another Bad Boys movie, so, I mean, we're...
We're going to need to sober up, get off the shit, and...
According to the studio, it's going to happen. According to Martin, it's going to happen. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see if we get two more Bad Boys movies out of it. And then, like I said, we did get a sequel to Bad Boys, which came out in many years later, which, you know...
2003.
Yeah, so that was kind of weird because, you know, back in the day... Yeah, now we get like sequels pretty much every other year, but yeah, this one took a while to come out, and you definitely saw the difference between this one and the first one, because
this is where Michael Bay starts coming into his own, as we know Michael Bay today. Like, I going back and watching this film, I'm like, all right, any minute somebody's going to show up in a yellow and black Camaro, and like, I'm just waiting on it, because the action just, like, at certain parts just... Oh, shit. It's about to go over the top. Here we go.
Yeah, because if you watch the first one, there's maybe three big action sequences and maybe one car chase, might be two. And then the second one, and, you know, and the rest of the time they're, you know, doing regular cop stuff. But in the second one, I mean, it starts off with a gunfight. There's probably a gunfight or an action sequence every 10 minutes or so.
I would say probably even more frequently than that. I mean, the second one is almost nonstop action.
Yeah, there's at least three or four car chases in that movie. It's definitely like Michael Bay.
And not just,
the chain.
You know, car chases, but no, we got, you know, fucking helicopters and everything else involved in the chases.
They're throwing boats and stuff at people. Yeah, it's
like, you know, I just got done playing Saints Row, and I'm like, holy shit, you know? Like, some of the shenanigans and stuff that's happening, like, well, this is straight out of Bad Boys. I could foresee this, like...
Yeah, Bad Boys 2, and not only that, like I said, it was a success. Like I said, it still made lots of money. Like, a more expensive movie, this was $130 million, made $273 million. But critically, it wasn't that well, because one of the complaints was that, you know, a Michael Bay style over the top action, but it was super long. I mean, this was a 2.5 hour movie.
Yeah, I forgot how long this movie was. Like,
I mean, this wasn't like, you know, like today, Age of Ultron, probably 2 hour movie. But yeah, 2.5 hour action movie was not something that you saw every day back in 2003. And like I said, this movie had so much action. I remember the first time I saw this in theaters, like, I needed a nap afterward. I mean, there was so much. It was so funny and so much action that, like, I mean, we were drained after we got
exhausting,
watching that
movie. Yeah.
I mean, sitting and watching it now, like, I had to break it into, I, like, watched the first half and then, like, had to watch the second half the next day because it was like, this movie goes on forever.
Yeah, it kind of catches you off guard.
Yeah, and like I said, this one...
And if you do want to check this film out, it is currently available on Netflix.
Yeah, and like I said, this movie... the story of this one is that they're still drug cops, but now they're part of, like, some, whatever, tactical narcotics unit, and they're trying to, like, well, the first one it was heroin, this one they're trying to stop the ecstasy trade, who's being run by a Cuban guy, which is Johnny Tapia.
Which is weird, because the Cuban guy leads them to the KKK, and it's just like, I don't think this would ever happen in real life.
Yeah, because the KKK is smuggling his drugs for him, Yeah, so there's this huge shootout where they're undercover.
And it's weird having
the
two black cops, you know, like, in their KKK hoods and everything, and they just do work.
And if you notice, they're the only black guys on the whole, like, team. Like, everyone else, like, the team leader is, like, Henry Rollins. And like all these white bearded guys on the team, but they send the two black guys undercover in the clan.
I mean, they look like, you know, freaking special forces. Or actually, I think they were.
Yeah, like one of the guys later on in the movie talks about being Delta Force. Yeah, and like I said, we also got Gabriella Union in this movie, who played Martin Lawrence's sister, who is a DEA cop, and who is also hooked up with
Mr.
Will
Lowry.
Smith, so caused a little bit of more drama there. And
I don't know what kind of guys my sister goes for, but it's not guys like, what are you trying to say? I'm not good enough for your sister? Like, I mean, you just see them like wanting to
You're
be like,
a dog, Mike.
Oh, we've already been down that rodeo. You don't even know it, motherfucker.
Yeah, and this also had Peter, I think his name is Peter Storwart, the crazy Russian guy you see in every movie. I mean, he was the Russian astronaut.
Peter Stormare.
Yeah, he was the Russian astronaut in Armageddon. He is now like a Russian mafia boss who like owns a bunch of clubs in Miami that they're running the drugs through. And you get that same Michael Bay low shot, because it's in the first movie, the low shot of the Miami sign with the plane flying over. But this time it's a helicopter. But he had to put that same scene in in this movie.
Dude, it might as well be a trademark at this point.
Yeah, I mean, but yeah, this one is definitely way more action than the first one.
I mean, it's way more action, but I mean, it's still got a decent storyline behind it.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of like the whole, you know, thing with Sid and, you know, that kind of play that, you know, shit, Will Smith's about to become part of the Marcus Burnett family.
Yeah, and like I said, Captain Howard back and all that stuff. And they even had, another bunch of cigars in this movie, because, of course, you got a Cuban bad guy. He's got to be smoking Cohibas. I mean, that's just required.
Yeah, I mean, if I was doing anything related to Cuban, I think the Cohiba is what I would go for.
And like I said, with this movie, even though the action and stuff was over the top, they still had those comedy elements that they had in the first movie. Even when they're in the middle of a gunfight, they're still, you know, busting each other's balls and making jokes and shit. Like
I mean, it's a distraction tactic, right? Yeah, I mean, dude, even you could be the most, you know, hardened criminal or whatever, but at some point, like, shit's just got to be funny, and you just got to put down the gats and, you know, sit there and be like, I just want to see how this shit plays out, because I'm not even going to have to kill a motherfucker, because these two motherfuckers are about to kill each other.
Yeah, I mean, I love there's a car chase with where they're chasing this van load of dead bodies, because that's how they're smuggling the drugs in. They own a funeral home, so they're bringing these bodies in, hauling them out, and stuffing them full of drugs and money, and shipping them, you know, the money back to Cuba and stuff, and shipping the. So they're chasing these guys and dead bodies are falling out of the car, and they steal.
Dude, I like it when they hit that one dead body, and it's like, wait a second, it was already dead. Yeah, this shit doesn't look good on TV.
It's like, you're running over people. No, Captain, they were already dead before we ran over them. And like they steal a car from Dan Marino, who's like on a test drive with like the brand new Cadillac XTS, I think at the time. And they're in the middle of the car chase. He's like, freaking Dan Marino should definitely buy this car.
Well, not this car.
Yeah, because I'm about to fuck this car up. But he definitely should buy one like it.
It's so awesome. Like, I'm just watching the action like replaying this in my head. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah, and if you thought the first movie was quotable, this one is probably like even more quotable, because the whole, you know, Martin Lawrence and Will had to go through like anger management after they shot all those people in the first movie. So like they got woosah is the word to like help calm them down. So like every time something bad happens, Martin Lawrence is getting all stressed. He's like, woosah. Yeah. even the captain.
Yeah, I mean, he's got like the entire like Zen garden going on in his office. Like,
yeah, even now, like today, like all these years later, somebody gets stressed out of the office, you're like, dude, woosah. You got a woosah.
Get a bonsai. It'll make your life better.
Yeah.
No Mr. Miyagi in this film.
Yeah, that's another big quotable line from that I still use it today. And the whole... This movie, like I said, rewatching it, you could almost break this up into two movies. I mean, it was so long, they could have like made this a two-parter, because like them finally busting the drug... shutting down the drug trade... That could have been the end of the movie right there.
But it wasn't.
But then, yeah, I said Martin Lawrence's sister gets kidnapped by Tapia, and he runs to Cuba. So now, with the help of their team, they all decide to go to Cuba and try to rescue her. And that could almost be a whole nother movie. at like I said, like you know, friggin', that's where you get one of the. They said it, I think, in the first movie, but that's where they really kind of nail it home in this one, when like the government's like, well, we're going to try to negotiate, and he's like, by the time y'all finish negotiating, my sister's going to be in a box, and Will Smith is like, you know, we ride together, we die together, we got to do this shit on our own, and then like,
yeah, I mean, it flashes back to the, like the yearbook, that's yeah. The caption.
But then like his whole team comes in, and like there's like a DEA agent that was, because she worked for, he's like, I don't know you guys, but y'all look like you're about to do something stupid. I'm in. Yeah. And then like his team goes like, did we ever tell you how crazy us ex-Delta guys are? Like, you know, fucking let's do it.
And then the two Cuban guys like jump yeah. on board and like,
which I love those characters too. They're like the other part of the team, like the other partners. Like I said, you got Will and Martin, and then you got these two Cuban guys.
And they're straight shooters, you know, pretty much by the book. Like, yeah, we're going to sit here on the sidelines, wait on you guys to fuck up, and then we're going to take your badges and your titles.
Yeah, and they give each other shit back and forth, like, you know, competing partners do.
Don't you need to do something like go get me a sandwich?
Yeah, I mean, and it's just so racist back and forth. They're like, hey man, we're buying lunch today. Y'all want some fried chicken and some grape soda? And he's like, isn't it low tide? Don't y'all have some family members to go pick up? He's like, that's wrong, man. Why y'all gotta go? Yeah, those guys, like I said, in both movies are just absolutely hilarious.
And I think I think another gag that really sticks out of my mind is the whole pool scene, right? Where they've got the dog chained up to the
yeah.
swimming pool, and you know, they're all sitting around, and the dog like takes off anyway. You see Marcus get washed out to shore in the beginning of the film, and then, you know, they're toward the last of the film. Damn, if they haven't rebuilt the pool, and the damn dog, you know, takes down the pool again, and they both get washed out to sea.
And that's funny too, because like, so they bring, like in the first movie, they're driving around singing Bad Boys at one point, and they bring it into this other movie that like. They sing, like, because, you know, the first song is like, bad boys. But in the next one, they try to, like, go farther in the song, and they're like, chicka-daka, hey, and it's like, dude, you really got to learn the words of the song. And like, man, we usually only sing the first part.
I'm going back to my original premise. That's the only part anybody knows, therefore that's the only part that exists. That song does not have any more official lyrics that are distinguishable as words.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, yeah, but the whole, like, I said, and they even, like, invented new technology in this movie, because the whole, there's a pretty epic car chase scene on, like, the big overpass in Florida, where cars are, like, coming off a semi-trailer and hitting stuff, and they literally built this car with a roll cage with cameras inside, so when you see those cars, like, flipping over and them driving under it, that's really happening. That's not CGI. They've got this, like, freaking armored car with cameras all over it, so they can get in close and do those amazing, you know, shots, and it be a practical effect instead of, like, you know, digital, like,
and
you would see nowadays.
You know, probably one of the things that makes this film, you know, the action, no matter how over the top, it seems semi-quasi believable because, like you said, it is practical. I think if you would have saw the same thing as a CGI, it wouldn't have the same impact.
Yeah, and like I said, all the other traditional Michael Bay thing is you got to blow something up. I mean, he blew it up in the first movie. You know, they blew up the, like, freaking, you know, hangar at the airport. In this one, they blow up a whole mansion, and it's a real. My buddy was living in Florida at the time, and actually watched some of the filming. And sure enough, like I said, it's supposed to be in Cuba, but no, they took a mansion in Florida and blew it up for this movie. So I mean, it's like I said, you're getting some serious shit in in this movie.
Yeah, I think the other serious shit we didn't even touch on is the fact that when Marcus, like, they meet up with the captain to try to get the warrant, and he's, you know, accidentally consumed the two tabs yes. of ecstasy, and he is just all kinds of fucked up.
Yeah, because they don't get a full warrant, but they get, like, a warrant where, like, you can sneak into the mortuary. If you find something else, we'll give you, like, a full warrant. And they find the dead body stuff with X, and, you know, Martin's getting a little sick dealing with dead bodies, and, goes to drink a glass of water, but two pills are, like, followed in. So when they go to the captain to inform him of what all's going on, he is high as shit.
Caressing the captain and, like, all kinds of shit. It's like, dude, don't you need to call your wife or something like that? He's like,
that's the thing, too. He's like, Martin gets shot in the ass in, like, the opening segment, and apparently, like, the stress, he's like, he got erectile dysfunction. And there's this whole scene after this huge, like, gun battle where they're in this electronic store trying to look at a video. And he starts talking about, he's like, that thing you did to my ass last night, man, it still hurts. And I can't get an erection no more.
And it's playing, like, all over. I mean, this is back in the days of, I don't know about a Circuit City, but I guess at Best Buy or Fry's, where you've got, you know, just walls of TV, and this stuff is being aired. Like, like, I don't know what kind of business you guys are running here, but I mean, yeah.
Y'all's got porno and gay shows on the TV?
That shit would not fly today. You could not get away with that. The film would have been, you know, freaking petitioned against and everything else.
Yeah.
It was a simpler time in U.S. history.
And that's another, like, quote that came out of the movie that you see in, like, a lot of stuff now, is, like, when the gangster calls, you know, Martin to tell him that he has his sister and stuff, they're like, shit just got real. And that's showed up in all kind of other movies. Speaking of which, let's talk a little bit about the impact of this movie on this pop culture in general, not just all the quotes you see, but like we said before, it changed the buddy cop dynamic. And then you even see in other movies them directly referencing this movie, like Simon Pegg's Hot Fuzz. And like I said, that's a movie about two
dysfunctional partners, I would say, you know?
Pretty much it's about one, like, you know, the guy who's like the ultimate cop in London kind of pisses everybody off because he's like too good. So they send him to this hole-in-the-wall town that has, like, no crime, and he's, like, super serious, and, you know, he has to learn how to, like, calm down, but his partner, who has, like, only been a cop in this small town, is obsessed with action movies. I mean, he has this whole library of, like, action movies, and he's, like, starts asking these all these questions. He's like, so have you ever, you know, leaped through the air while firing a gun? No. He's like, you ever leaped through the air while firing two guns? Have you seen Lethal Weapon? He's like, no. Have you seen Bad Boys 2? He's like, no. He's like, how the hell have you not seen Bad Boys 2?
How are you a cop?
And then later on, he like makes them, when they finally kind of become friends, they, you know, he makes them sit down and watch all these old cop movies. And like I said, Bad Boys 2 is one of them. And then once you get to the big action sequence of the movie, there is so many like subtle references to Bad Boys. You know, they're getting all the guys like, shit just got real. And there's like the freaking 360 degree Michael Bay shot and random shit blowing up. I mean, like, the whole last half of the movies is pretty much directly inspired by Bad Boys 2.
Absolutely. I think that's what... I don't know. You know, like you said, this film has set the stage so much for the way that people interact. And, you know, I mean, you kind of saw the same thing, once again, going back to 21 Jump Street. I didn't get around to seeing 22 Jump Street, but
that's another one you need to see. That's freaking hilarious, and yeah, I mean, especially toward the end of the movie, they start teasing like all these upcoming movies, like 23 Jump Street, 24 Jump Street, and it just keeps going on and on.
But I think that's, you know, that's what makes movies great. Like, when you can't take yourself so seriously and you can have fun with it, you can make fun of yourself. Like, I think that gets your audience and everything else engaged. I mean, you know, one of the number one rules of comedy is learn to hate yourself, I think. And, you know.
Yeah, because, I mean...
Then the other aspect is learn to hate your fans.
Yeah, because both of these movies, I mean, they're in some serious, like, life or death shit, but it's not, like I said, they don't take it seriously. They're hilarious. And in this movie, like I said, I compared Martin Lawrence to Murtaugh. And this one is even more so, because he's like, you know, planning to leave the narcotics task force. He's like, yeah, I don't want to be your partner anymore. And eventually he's like, you know, just like Murtaugh, he's like, all right, I'm not too old for this shit. I'll stick around for a little bit longer. But you see him, like, you know, just dealing with...
Yeah, I mean, ready to turn in his badge, everything else.
The stress is getting to him. Like I said, he's all, like, I don't want to, you know, shoot people no more. all this other crazy stuff.
But I think a lot of that, too, just has to do with the fact that he's pissed off that, you know, Mike is shacking up with his sister. You know, and then after you realize, like, all right, you know what? Maybe Mike isn't as much of a dog as I thought he was. He could be a dog, but he's my dog.
Yeah. That, and there's the whole running gag. There's, like, so many few, like, subtle references to the first movie, too, because, like I said, he makes fun of him the whole time of, like, driving like a bitch. And they get in this car chase, and Martin has to drive the Porsche. And he's like hauling ass. He's like, yeah, when they beat, he's like,
oh yeah,
this
they
is
get
how
to
you
that,
drive.
They get to that
now
end,
on,
and
this
it's
is
like,
how you drive.
They've got to outrun that car, like, to make that gap. And it's like, Yeah, that's how you drive. And then, you know, later on, like, Martin just does some crazy ass, like, shooting. And he's like, that's how you shoot.
Yeah,
from now on, that's how you shoot.
I mean, it takes a dysfunctional motherfucker to shoot a guy in the eye like that.
So, yeah, I mean, that comedy element, I mean, that's what keeps it going. And otherwise, I think if this was dubbed a straight action film without some of the improv and some of the comedy and everything else, I don't think this film would have been nearly as successful, or the franchise in general. I mean,
yeah, and like I said, with the second one too, it had a video game spinoff. I think it was like Bad Boys Miami Heat or something like that, and it even had a big music video tie-in with Puffy and Nelly and Murphy Lee, I think, is in it. And like I said, that the Shake Your Tail Feather song, if you ever heard that, was from the Bad Boys 2 soundtrack. I mean, the music in these movies were great 90s rap albums.
Yeah, dude. I mean, these soundtracks, I mean, I can remember having the first Bad Boys soundtrack. And, dude, you could bump to that thing, you know, like you're talking about with, you know, the freaking 15s in the back of the car and everything.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, you're bumping some hardcore gangster shit.
Boom, boom, boom. Welcome to the city. I mean, I used to jam to that thing. And then, I mean, there was Tupac was on that soundtrack, all kind of stuff. And like I said, the second one with the Puffy songs, it's kind of funny because we talk about, you know, the both these movies being, you know, would make our list of cigar films. The music video, there's, like I said, it looks like it's in Cuba or Miami or whatever. There's a whole bunch of cigars. I mean, the video starts off with the three of them sitting at a bar talking about their favorite cigars, but they're, you know, basically they're talking about women and not cigars. And Puffy actually got sued over this video because in that video there's a scene where it shows a cigar factory and them rolling cigars, and apparently they didn't have permission
to be filming
in that factory, and you know the company tried to claim that they recorded their secret, you know, manufacturing and rolling techniques. And yeah, like I said, Puffy got sued over that video.
Yeah, that was a interesting bit of trivia that I stumbled across on that one.
Yeah, I don't remember the captain smoking as many cigars in this one because
he
had gone all like full hippie. I mean, he was like making people take their shoes off, and he was another one that had gone like the full woosah. And even when you see his house later, he's got like all this artwork and stuff and painting. He's trying to deal with the stress that Martin and Will put him through.
I mean, dude, you got to have that retreat though.
Like, yeah.
And I like the fact too that at some point the captain's like, "Look, we're in over our heads. Off the record, you guys do what you do and do it to the best of your ability. Just make sure whatever you do, you win."
Yeah, it's like, and I don't want to know.
Yeah.
Like even when they go to Cuba, he shows up with like, "I can't officially support you, but I've brought you a care package. Don't ask. He works for the CIA."
Yeah, I mean, that was, you know, an interesting part in the captain too, you know, when the girl's coming around and she's like, you know, "I'm going to have your department shut down and blah, blah, blah." And he's like, "You don't have the power to shut me down." And she's like, "I was just promoted. Here's the papers. You're shut down."
Yeah. Like, and it was, Helberg from CSI is like the internal affairs girl that's trying to shut him down in the first movie. And there's almost things like, y'all should just bone and get it on. I mean, there's so much like tension between her and the captain. They're all like, "Yeah, y'all got something going on, don't you, Cap?"
I mean, but once again, you see that dysfunctional relationship, and you know behind the scenes that's happening.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Like, that's like a real thing that happens.
I'm pretty sure that, you know, when we get Bad Boys 3, that, you know, that's going to be, you know, expanded upon. Like, secretly they're married or engaged or something like that, and, protocol, they're not allowed to be on the record as married, and...
That's the thing, you know. We talked about Henry Rollins being in, like, the first of the movie, but he's not there when they go to Cuba. I don't know what happened to Henry Rollins, but, like I said, they must have only had him for the first part of the movie because, yeah, he kind of disappears after that.
But, yeah, I mean, it isn't, you know, awesome when they're in Cuba and they're trying to escape to the U.S. military base and be like, "That's U.S. soil," and they get stopped, like, right outside.
Yeah.
And, like, "You're not on the base. We can't help you." And they're in the middle of a fucking landmine field.
Yeah. Freaking iguana steps on a landmine and gets blown up just to show that there's like... Yeah.
Well, I think that's the over-the-topness, too, because in that scene, you know, they shoot the main bad guy, he falls over dead, But not does he fall over dead. Nope, he falls on a landmine and gets his ass blown up. Like, you just yeah, gotta add course. Those additional explosions.
That, and even before that, they like I said, they can't escape with the rest of the team, so they end up getting this car chase with Tapia, and they steal his Hummer, and they're running through these ghetto shacks that they have there, where it pretty much is the cabin for like the workers of the drug dealers. So they're full of like meth labs and stuff, and everything's like flammable, so everything's blowing up as they're running through all these buildings and stuff.
Damn it, who would have known ether was flammable? Was it the first film where they steal the truck and
steal the truck and it's full of ether?
Full of ether, like,
so they're like throwing barrels of ether out and like, they're blowing up.
Out of all the vehicles you could have stole, you find the one with volatile explosions. You couldn't find a fucking ice cream truck or something. No, we get a truck full of ether.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, so many random explosions. which, you know, it pretty much started. I mean, they blew up that they get in that gunfight in the at the airport, and everything starts blowing up. So yeah, they definitely upped the explosion factor in the second movie.
I did feel bad for the iguana though.
Yeah,
kind of reminded me of my geckos.
Oh, and the rats. When they go into Tapia's, that's how they sneak into to plant bugs in Tapia's house, is they pretend to be exterminators because he's got a rat problem. And freaking Martin's scared of rats. And he's like, these aren't normal rats. These are African colonial rats.
Yes.
They're just the explorers of the rat world. They just all they want to do is go out and find pussy. That's all they do.
Little rat pussy.
and there's two rats, like, doing it. And he's like, he's calling, like, Will Smith on the radio. He's like, dude, there's these rats. There's a papa rat nailing the shit out of his mama rat. And he's like, how does that help me do my job? Man, they fuck just like us. There's so much weird stuff in that movie.
Yeah, that and just finding the miscellaneous finger. Of all things to find, like, just this random finger.
Yes. And they cut up the Russian guy's brother and steal all his clubs and stuff. But yeah, he's got the finger. He's like, start poking Martin in the ear with it. It's, dude, don't we touch me with no dead fingers.
The dead man's willy.
Yeah.
The dead man's wet willy.
And when they go to raid his house later on, you know, the Russian guy shows up drunk as shit, you know, with two guns and starts killing all these people. He's like, I'm the Russian Grim Reaper. That's the one thing I remember about that actor is, like, every time I see him, I'm like, oh, dude, it's the Russian Grim Reaper. Of all the movies he's been in, like, I mean, he played Satan in the Constantine movie. But yeah, every time I see him, I'm like, oh, it's the Russian Grim Reaper.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with these films in general, I mean, it's just so awesome. I mean, you get the stealth aspects, you get the over-the-top action, you like, they just bring so much to the table that, I don't know, I personally don't think that, yeah, the runtime, this could have been split into two films, but I don't think it would have did the franchise justice.
No, I mean,
I think the second film would have felt, or third film would have felt incomplete.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so... It's just so wild. Like I said, like I needed a nap after watching this this movie the first time. And another thing about so we talked about how great Miami looks in these movies. The cars too. I mean, the first one, you know, Will's got the Porsche.
Yep.
And like in this one, he's got a Ferrari. But then they get in a car chase with these Jamaican gang members that are trying to steal the drugs. And every one of them drives, like, a classic muscle car or something. There's, like, Chevelles and Novas.
Just
and
super hot-rodded
all these, like,
out.
Badass
yes.
cars in that car. That's the only thing I, like, didn't like. I'm like, you're ruining all these great cars, man.
can we save at least just a few of these, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure we could put some light bars or something on here and make it an apartment issue. I mean,
yeah.
I'm sure that's a thing.
They start getting chewed out by the captain. They're like, he gets the report of how much damage is done. He's like, how did y'all sink a boat? Because like a boat got thrown at him at one point. It was like, he's like, that was DEA. We didn't do that.
Yeah. You could see him right here.
That Martin Lawrence, a little rep to Atlanta. You know, he's wearing a freaking Falcons jersey through half. You know, back when it was still cool to wear a Michael Vick jersey, before all the drama he got in. Yeah, like I said, he was representing the ATL in this movie, which I thought was kind of cool when I went back and watched it again.
A little throwback to the Dirty South, the Dirty Birds.
Yeah, like I said, back when it was cool to to wear a Michael Vick jersey. This was before the whole dogfighting and going to jail for a couple years drama.
Yeah, you want to ruin your career? Fuck with animals. That'll do it every time.
Yeah. So as we kind of getting wrapping things up, do you have a favorite scene or part to these movies?
I don't know about just one part. I mean, the dialogue and the dynamics between the two characters, I think, you know, appeal to me much more than just the action. You know, anybody can do an action, you know, scene or whatever, but the dynamic that Will Smith and Martin Lawrence bring together,
yeah,
that's what makes these movies for me, and that's what sets them apart from so many other films.
Yeah.
Because...
And they weren't even, like, the original choices, too. I can't remember what actors, but they originally offered the role to a couple, like, I think Saturday Night Live guys, and I just... They were kind of older, and I just don't think it would have had the same dynamic with these two, and... You don't see guys that are comedic actors getting offered these action roles, and I think that was a good risk that they took to bring these two guys in.
Yeah, well, I mean, it set the stage. I mean, you know, we got Will Smith later on in Men in Black, we got Wild Wild West, we got so many other great films that I don't think we would have gotten had it not been for the Bad Boys franchise.
Yeah, I mean, one of my other favorite movies, Independence Day. I mean, you wouldn't have had Will Smith in that without you know, him proving himself as an action hero in Bad Boys.
And it was interesting to see Will Smith, you know, like you said, he was doing the, you know, made-for-family, you know, semi-quasi-comedies and Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but, you know, up until I saw Bad Boys, like, you know, I mean, it's almost like Bob Saget in a way, right? You see Bob Saget on Full House or, you know, American Funniest Home
Video. Then you see a
stand-up
and you're like,
and then you see a stand-up bit and you're like, shit just got real.
Yeah.
Hey. I'm not easily offended, but I feel slightly disgusted.
They even had a Bad Boys joke in Fresh Prince of Bel-Air one time. There was, like, his, like, little cousin or whatever. He's like, Mommy and Daddy won't let me go see Bad Boys. He's like, what you gonna do? So they would make jokes about that in Fresh Prince. So, as we're finishing up, so you got any...
Well, let me ask you. Yeah. You know, right back at you. Is there one scene or one thing that really stands out or appeals to you? I mean...
I think one of my favorite scenes in the first movie is the liquor store sequence when the guy pulls the gun on him and doesn't think they're cops. That scene always cracks me up. In the second one, I think the whole sequence of them raiding the Tapia's house in Cuba is another, like, one of my favorite sequences. Like I said, there's so much stuff. Are the opening sequence where they're at the, you know, KKK rally. I mean,
well,
that whole,
I mean,
scene is
you know,
hilarious.
Just to elaborate, I mean, I think it's funny that, you know, they end up capturing that, you know, guy from the KKK, turn him into a snitch, and the entire time the second movie's going on, for the most part, dude's, you know, in the fucking trunk of the car, and, you know, they're jumping off bridges and all kinds of shit.
Oh, yeah. Like... he takes a bunch of pictures of, like, Martin hugging him like he's his buddy, and he's like, we're gonna put this up on the, on your, you know, KKK bulletin board or something. We're going to show all your buddies this photo of you hanging out with the black people if you don't cooperate with us.
So, I, you know, to me, that was one thing that I thought was awesome.
So do you have final thoughts on this cigar here as we
mean, you know, down here to the last third, you know, the spice and the cedar notes have really, you know, come to on this cigar. I mean, this has been a very pleasurable, relaxing smoke. I mean, this is something that at this price point, dude, I wouldn't care to stock up two or three boxes in my humidor and have them, you know, for weekend, everyday smokes. And, I mean, that's the thing with AJ Fernandez that we talked about a little bit in our cigar segment is you're going to get a good quality smoke at a very reasonable, you know, price point. And I have no complaints.
Yeah, I mean, I love this cigar. And one of the things, like I said, I love that AJ New World, but this one being a medium to full body cigar, it's got a little bit more strength than the New World, and like I said, I always like the strong cigars, so this one definitely appeals to me.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, this just has been a fun segment, man. I mean, it hasn't been that long since I watched the films prepping for the segment, but I'm already ready to go back and watch them again.
Yeah, how excited are you for, you know, the possibility of us getting a third and fourth movie?
I mean, if we can get the Martin Lawrence and Will Smith cast, the duo again, Yeah. I'm all for it. Now,
yeah, because if we don't get both of them together, I don't know if I want to see it or not. But
my only concern is that, you know, there is that potential that if Michael Bay's involved, that, you know, it becomes Transformers again. Yeah. And I don't want to see that happen.
Well, right now the rumors are, like I said, nothing's kind of confirmed. But so far, I think Michael Bay is supposed to be executive producing, but I don't think he's directing this one. The guy who's directing this one, and I don't have his name in front of me, but he's the same guy who directed Smokin' Aces and the A-Team movie, so he's definitely...
And Smokin' Aces is up there as one of my all-time favorite movies, so, I mean,
got the pedigree of the action comedy movie.
I mean, that's going to set the bar really, really high for me, you know, just knowing that fact alone.
Hey, maybe we get Liam Neeson in there as a bad guy or something.
Yeah, this time I can actually talk about Liam Neeson and not confuse him with Leonard Nimoy. God, I'm surprised our listeners even let me get away with that one.
Well, we didn't get any emails on that one, but yeah. All right, I think that'll about wrap us up, and we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
We are police officers.
We're not police officers. I'm not stupid.
I know.
What
are you?
I've seen police.
I'm going to reach for my badge, okay?
Badges? Do you want badges, mother bitch? I give you badges. Here, 99 cents each.
Huh? I sell you some.
He got 8 fucking badges. I told you this cop thing don't work.
I blow you. Then I blow you.
Blow me? What the fuck? No. Hot me? That's
from the Middle East.
I killed before.
I kill again.
Hot me, please.
I'm going to blow
on.
You.
Hot me.
Hold on.
Do you see the fucking emotion I'm going through right now? That means this shit is serious, okay? That means me and this motherfucker's not vibing right now. That's what that shit means, okay?
You got something on your chest?
I got something. That's why the fuck
do you want some of me?
The guy's got a cannon.
What do you want?
Do you want some?
I won't.
You want some bad enough, then you come get some.
I'm gone.
Wait. Hey, freeze, bitch.
You freeze, bitch.
Oh, shit. I'm fucked.
And now it's time for Blowin' Smoke.
And welcome to Blowin' Smoke, where we talk to cool people doing some cool things. And this time around, we're talking about something I recorded a couple weeks ago something I was involved in. If anyone has got wind back when we did our steampunk episode and Strangio was here, we talked about his fan film, Trial of the Mask. Well, right now they're in production of the sequel to Trial of the Mask, which doesn't have a title yet, but there's a steampunk Jabba the Hutt scene in it, and guess who got to play Jabba last weekend? So,
our very own steampunk Jabba?
Yeah.
Wow.
So while I was down in Atlanta chilling in Jabba's Palace, I did an interview with a little bit with a steampunk Fett Strangeway and the director of the upcoming film. So this is that interview. All right. Introduce yourself, sir.
My name is Corey Matt Burnett. I am the director for the Steampunk Boba Fett Part 2. Working title. I'm not telling you yet.
And our director of photography here?
Brian Roberts, the director of photography.
All right, so can you tell the people a little bit about why we've been trapped in a basement all day?
Because we had a bunch of half-naked girls, and that's what's the fun thing to do in a basement all day.
Who wouldn't want to be here today?
I mean, that's the one I stuck around so long was, yeah. I mean, I wrapped a couple hours ago. I just, you know, stayed around to watch.
So we started filming the second Steampunk Boba Fett fan film. Today was our first, we started shooting today for the first bit of the new movie. We started with our version of Jabba's Palace. Kind of a little bit of the steampunk edge of getting to an opium den from the late 1800s. With instead of having one slave Leo, we had a bunch of slave girls, so it's more of a harem, and made Jabba a pimp, and you know who Jabba is.
Of course, Jabba's always a pimp. Or at least that's how I play him.
So we had quite an interesting experience with all the girls in here, and we have our bald alien, we have our twin clones, we have our girls with their crazy markings, and what else do we have in there?
Just kind of an army of servants, almost.
We had lots of smoking drinks.
And we actually ran out of dry ice for the shoot. We bought 2 bricks and used them all.
I mean, I tried to light up my cigar to add to the smoking, but they're like, no, it's a no-smoking
set. Yeah, there's a lot of fabric in the room. It was decorated pretty heavily.
Yeah, it's very satiny. It looks like a very looks like a pair of 70s, you know, disco pants down there.
Yeah, I want to decorate my basement though. I need to like take the set when y'all are done and just move that to my house and like, you know, add me an ashtray.
See if Houston will let you move in the basement. Just take it.
There you go. I'll just never go home. You know, I'll just hide in the basement the whole time.
It's been a fun shoot. A lot of interesting experiences. You know, making sure people are showing up and getting the right way to work together and trying to coordinate people. I mean, it makes a long day. But
is this the first thing you've filmed on for this project?
For the second movie, yes. It's the first. We broke ground today.
Sweet. So I was here for day one. Cool.
So if we get nothing else in the movie, at least we have Jabba scene.
Yeah, we can make something out of this. I don't know what, but it looks cool. I mean, it's very dingy lighting. It looks like an opium den, basically.
I just want to see the outtakes because, I mean, the leftover film is going to be priceless.
So, yeah, we had our lovable Jabba do some disgraceful acts toward our slaves. But I think our slaves enjoyed it. We have a very nasty tongue, which I don't know what happened to the tongue.
It's going to be framed. It's going to hang up in my nerd cave now for like, or my wall of shame.
Nobody took it home with them and hung on to it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's in my bag. It's going home with me. The thing has been in my mouth. I'm keeping it. I marked my territory.
Yours. Is that the first time you've had KY on your tongue?
Yes, but we're not going to, professionally. Maybe recreationally.
Is it the first time you've licked a girl's bald head?
Yes, I think that was another first today. I'm like, at one point, I'm like, this is so freaky. I'm like, the girl that I was with, she's like, what? I'm like, no, not you. The situation. This is not how I expected to spend my Saturday.
Oh, it was great, though, watching you guys do all that. So, once it comes together, it'll be very... I don't know if interesting is the word, but it'll be something.
Yeah, it'll be something you have to see. Like, how long ago did y'all do the first one?
2 years ago. We actually knocked it out in about 6 months, and this time we actually did a lot of pre-planning. Problem is, we got Dragon Con and Netherworld and everybody's costumers, so everybody's involved in all these projects, so we're trying to knock this and one of the other shoots before Dragon Con, and then we have kind of a lull for a couple months, and then we'll get the rest of the shoots done toward the end of the year. Which gives us time to start cutting together these scenes a little bit. So it's a little different process than last time, but this time what we learned from last time was like pre-planning and building the set and figuring out what to do and how things are done and getting the people. We got more people involved in this one than we had last time. A lot more practical effects. We're doing the J.J. Abrams same, less blue screen, more, you know.
More lens flare.
Oh, totally, yeah.
I have plenty of lens flare. I even made a robot for this one. And he's just this one little moment across the screen. And
yeah, if he can have his ball droid in the new Star Wars, we can have our RC car droid thingy.
Yeah, don't ask how it works, because I don't want to admit it, how it works. It looks cool, but I don't know if it admits right.
It looks sweet.
If it's in there for like 2 seconds flying across the screen, I don't care. But it was fun at least making it, at least trying to figure out how to make it. So that's all the fun of it, too, is... Y'all have no set building experience, and we got in there and built a set. You know, had a little help from a guy that works at Netherworld, kind of get us pointed in the right direction.
Shout out to Lee Pennington.
Yes, and we took that and borrowed things from people, bought stuff at Goodwill. I mean, we turned a bit of insulated wall into a computer panel. We've, you know, it's just crazy things like that. How do you hide everything? How do you make... taking rotisserie chicken things and making weapons out of them. But it looks cool. And when you put it in context with these things, it makes a very interesting effect. So I mean, I'm giving away secrets, but at the same time, it's amazing once you start putting this stuff together. Like, oh, that actually does kind of fit.
Yeah, I mean, y'all sent me a couple of pictures while y'all been working on it, and it didn't do it justice till I was actually in there. And I was like, this looks amazing. I'm like I said, I want this at my house now. Like, screw sheetrocking. I'm going to, like, put, you know, weird cloth on the walls now and build a throne.
You had a nice little throne room. You had your nice little throne. I mean, come on. You were a pimp for a day. I mean, you had what?
I did the easy. I got to sit there all day and just watch y'all work and look cool.
You were calling girls in there to come dance for you and tugging on chains and making them do what you want. Come on now.
I should have had a fistful of ones just make it rain at one point.
But overall, it was a fun day. It was, you know, now looking back, you're like, oh, stress over little things, but that's what you do, you know. You know, just kind of get everybody coordinated and everything. But I had a good time. Talk about...
Yeah, what's your experience of shooting this thing? And
so I've been... It's been a while. It's been about a month just building the set and then second-guessing ourselves. And I think I spent 3 days trying to hang a light in the ceiling, just kind of rigging it up in the cheapest way possible. It was interesting. I don't normally do video like this. I'm a corporate videographer, so this is totally out of my element.
It's different doing something like creative and not you know, stuffy.
yeah, just bust out all the toys and just make it look cool.
Yeah, because we got a lot of creative lighting. I mean, we got about three, four different versions of lighting that are hitting each other and trying to blend them.
I'd say it's pretty ambitious, playing with a lot of color temperature, types of lights, I mean, everything.
Our editor's going to have a field day, or hate us one.
I think he's going to hate us. There'd be too many colors.
Either he's going to be, what the hell did y'all send me?
How do I make a story out of all this? You got plenty of beautiful girls, but it'll look good when we get it done and put all the scenes together, because this comes out of another scene we're shooting on another location, you know. So once they all kind of start piecing together and get the music in there, I think it'll be nice, you know.
So what's y'all's guesstimate of when y'all are going to try to have it out and about?
I want to try to have it ready for the whole May the 4th celebration next year. So our plan is to have everything filmed by the end of the year. That gives us, you know, and start editing as we go, but then to spend those first couple months editing, writing the music, finishing up marketing materials. And like, we shot some of the marketing materials today. Like, I'm going to do some interesting posters. We won't tell what they are yet, but there's some little fun versions of, you know, with John, the Boba Fett character, and some other pop culture type situations. But I'd like to do it by the May the 4th, and that sounds like a long way away, but it's not when it comes to this type of work.
I think it's realistic. Yeah. I think we're ambitious and trying to be a little bit more creative, but May the 4th is a pretty easy deadline.
Luckily, the other scenes we got to do is not quite as set-driven as this. On this, we really built the set from scratch. Most of the other sets are on location, so that less for, you know, having to go into it, but it's got a lot more action scenes we got to, you know, deal with. So they got their own trials and tribulations, I guess. But at the end of the day, it's going to be a great project when we're done.
And speaking of posters and stuff, I know one of the things y'all were doing, instead of doing like a Kickstarter or a GoFundMe or something like that, y'all were actually selling some artwork, some original artwork from Steampunk Boba Fett. And where can people kind of follow that stuff and also keep up with, you know, the production and, you know, keep up what all the news is going on with the movie?
You can definitely go to Steampunk Boba Fett's Facebook page. He promotes it like crazy. You can go to iexistonline.com/SPBFmovie, and that has the link to go to it. But if not, go to the Steampunk Boba Fett. He's always posting stuff that's going on. You can see he's got it linked up there and keep up with his antics. Because we'll be adding more. Right now, most of the work is mine that's up there, but we're adding more from other artists who've been involved, and we're putting some of the behind the scenes shots that kind of pop up. Some of the fun behind the scenes shots that pop up, like one that'll go up today, is him and his Boba Fett mask blowing out his birthday candles. That'll be a fun little shot to put up, you know. So yeah, you can go there and kind of help support, you know, a little bit.
And whenever this interview goes up, I'll put a link to that page and to the original movie, so you can catch up before the new one comes out. We talked about it way back when John was on our steampunk episode, so if you haven't watched it yet, you know, time to watch it again before the new one comes out.
Yeah, and it's kind of a continuation. It'll pick up where the other one left off, you know, so it's kind of the next chapter of it, you know. So once you see it, and when this one comes out, you'll go, okay, that makes sense where they work together. So
cool. Thanks for your time. Thanks for putting me in it. I mean, this has been fun. I mean, it's a strange way to spend a Saturday. I'd either been like at Brad's house playing Nintendo 64.
Strange way.
That was an unintentional joke.
Is that kind of a Freudian slip there? Yeah. You know, we're all thinking about John. We love John. Yeah. John's a nut, but we love John.
See, that's what he gets for leaving early, that we can talk about him now and he won't hear this. You know, he doesn't listen to the podcast.
Oh, he's not here. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, it's good. I mean, everybody had a good attitude and was willing to work through everything today. And it's like, you couldn't ask for better people. Especially when everybody's doing it for fun and, you know, just helping each other out, you know. I will get repay my debts to everybody in one way or another later. It's just a matter of when they ask.
That's who's buy me a shot at Dragon Con. We're cool.
I don't know about me at Dragon Con. Y'all buy some posters so I can afford to go to Dragon Con.
All right, we'll be right back. I'm here with the legend, John Strangeway. Can you tell people why we've been stuck in a basement all day?
You didn't put the lotion on.
You put the lotion in the basket.
Yeah, and I was forced to use the hose. We all need a good hosing right now. No, we've been stuck in this basement. We've been filming the Jabba opium den scene, which surprisingly didn't have any opium in it.
We did have a hookah cane. That was about as big as it is. Yeah.
That you enjoyed.
Exactly. This has been it. We've been working on, if anyone on the internet, I think we talked about when you were on the podcast last time, the whatever Trial of the Mask steampunk Boba Fett film. Well, there's going to be a sequel coming out probably, what, sometime next year?
2016, definitely towards 2016, you know, the first half 2016, because we got several more scenes to film throughout now until December, just because of our schedule. Yours truly, Mr. Joe Harris here, is playing the part of steampunk Jabba.
Yeah, so when you see that, I'm the man behind the mask.
And the tongue.
That was disturbing. All right, well, I'll let you hit the road, sir.
Thank you kindly. We just want to give a shout-out and thank you to everyone involved. And hopefully check out the site. It'll be up on YouTube so everybody can look at and watch it. I didn't enjoy.
Hey, man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time for Beer 30. What are we drinking this week, Brad?
We're actually drinking a collaboration. In fact, we're drinking something so rare that people haven't even got their hands on this yet unless they're up here having this beer with us tonight.
Yeah, I mean, trying to find notes on this, it's not on either company's website. Like I said, this was delivered here to the cigar shop like by hand, so it's not really out in a whole lot of places yet. It is a collaboration with our own local Terrapin Brewery and Cigar City Brewing out of Tampa, and it is the
Vapricot.
An apricot ginger imperial pale ale.
Yeah, I mean, I am not an IPA fan by any stretch of the imagination, but you know what? This isn't bad. I mean, at 9.5%, it only takes about half a glass before you start feeling good enough just to go ahead and consume the rest.
Yeah, I mean, in the bitterness of the beer is kind of
it's masked
balanced
by the
with
fruitiness,
the fruitiness
yeah.
of it. Because, yeah, this, I mean, they literally brewed this beer with
apricot puree.
Yeah, apricot puree and ginger. So it definitely adds a sweetness to that, you know, that hoppiness that you get from it being an IPA.
And there's also, you know, that hint of ginger kind of really sticks out to me. Like, it's almost palate cleansing in a way. Like, it masks the bitterness with almost that subtle spice that a ginger has, you know? I mean, it's just got a clean taste to it. So, I would not be opposed to having this beer in the fridge available at all times. Like, this is a great collaboration, and I'm actually really digging it more so than I thought because, like I said, I am not an IPA fan.
Yeah, I mean, you know, generally, like I said, IPAs are just a little bit too hoppy for me. I'm getting old. I don't like the bitterness anymore. But this is, like I said, it's so well balanced. This is something I could definitely drink on a regular basis. And plus, the label artwork is awesome.
Yeah, I was about to touch on the artwork here. Like, can we get a picture of this on our website or update like our freaking Facebook logo or something like that? With this logo is awesome.
I posted a picture of it the other day, but yeah, it'll definitely be up on our website when the episode goes up. Yeah, it's the traditional Terrapin turtle, but he's dressed up kind of like, you know, with a Cuban hat and a Guy Barra shirt, smoking a fat cigar while he's playing his acoustic guitar.
Which I'm fans of all of those things.
Oh, yeah.
So what are you thinking as far as a untapped rating on this one?
I mean, this is a solid 4 for me. I mean, this is probably one of the best, you know, IPAs I've drank. It's like I said, that it's so well balanced that it doesn't. I'm not offended by the bitterness.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we are recording live, and we're outside on the patio under the ceiling fans and everything. Like, I kind of feel spoiled, but as this is starting to come up in temperature a little bit, the ginger notes are really starting to become more and more prominent as the beer warms up.
Yeah, this would probably, you know, pair well with some food too. I mean, this is something you could definitely drink while you're, you know, grilling some burgers or whatnot.
Yeah, I think I'd want something with a little bit of a spice, but you know, I think I'm at like a 4.25 or so on this one. Like, you know, coming into it, I was like, oh, the artwork's cool. It seems like a cool concept. I've had some of the Cigar City beers before, and you know, we're a big fan of a lot of the stuff that Terrapin has come out with. But this collab is, you know, it's something to be appreciated. And if you're a fan of cigars, you're a fan of Terrapin, come out, try it.
Definitely. Like I said, right now, don't know who else has it, but you can get it here at the cigar shop. And with that, we'll be right back with whatever comes next.
Stay tuned.
Yes, science! And welcome back. It's time for science! You ready to learn some shit, Brad?
Oh, yeah. I feel like I'm ready to get my education on, my friend.
Yeah, you might need a lot of education. So, good thing we got stories for you today.
All right, sweet. What's on the agenda?
First thing, someone is trying to build a space elevator.
A space elevator, you say?
Oh, yes, for people that really need to get high.
I mean, I'm just trying to see how practical this is. I mean, I'm not saying it can't be done, but I mean, there's going to have to be all kinds of restricted airspace and all kinds of other stuff, like...
Yeah, this plan thing, Toth Technologies out of Canada has filed a patent to start trying to build this thing, and it's going to be 20 times taller than the world's tallest structure currently. It'll be about 12 miles high.
That is redonkulous. So, what do you just go up there and, hey, look, I'm above the clouds. Sweet.
Well, this will pretty much be used as a launching pad for space aircraft. Having to launch a rocket at ground level like we do now uses a lot of fuel, and this would actually save like 30% of fuel by launching from space, as for, you know, or at least launching from upper atmosphere than it is from, you know, ground level, because the air is thinner and there's less gravity up there. Also, like I said, if we can... It's easier to get, like, if we could do some kind of construction platform and actually build a spacecraft up there. Yeah, it's a whole lot easier to get to space if you start in space. You know, that's pretty much like you see Star Trek and all these other things where they're building these big ass spaceships. You know, those things aren't getting built on, like, you know, at Earth. They're built on some kind of some station in the upper atmosphere where they don't have to like launch all that heavy shit into outer space. They can, you know, take it up a few pieces at a time and build something massive up there.
That seems pretty interesting. I don't know. I'd like to see it in action.
I mean, it's also going to be used for wind power generation. So not only is this going to be something that for, you know, commercial spaceflight, but also, you know, it's going to be a electricity generating endeavor, because it's going to be like basically like a giant freaking
wind farm. Word. How big is this thing going to be? I mean, dude, that's going to be a massive ass structure.
Yeah, I don't know how like big around it is, but they said it'll be like 12 miles. So yeah, that's going to be a serious some serious stuff to like to get all the way up there. Especially, you know,
that instantly become a target, you know, especially in this day and age of terrorism and, you know, everything else, like,
yeah, it's going to be a big thing to, you know, crash into.
Like, I mean, I don't know. Wonder how the birds feel about it.
I'm just wondering how like this thing will survive, like, you know, weather, like hurricanes and such.
It's gonna be one big ass lightning rod. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I'm not gonna say it can't be done or whatever, but yeah, until this thing is built, And I'm going to be like, all right, cool idea, cool patent, cool story, bro.
That's another thing they're saying it's going to be able to, because whatever, SpaceX has been experimenting with these reusable rockets where, like, once it launches, they will come back and land on, like, a barge or something. They've done some experiments with that. And that's going to be a lot easier with the space elevator because it's, like I said, basically we could launch a rocket and then the rockets can return to the platform and refuel. So it's, you know, not only easier to launch, but like I said, we can, you know,
it's almost spend like less a renewable money. Energy yeah. source. I see where it's going. Interesting.
And speaking of futuristic stuff, we talked about it a while back, the Megabots challenge, because America has challenged Japan to the first ever giant robot battle. And Japan accepted, but their terms was, we want melee hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the picture of this thing with the big-ass chainsaw and everything. That's freaking epic.
So we have a year to prepare for the ultimate battle coming, and Megabots has put out a Kickstarter. I think there's like a month left in the Kickstarter. Last time I checked, they were up to, they were wanting 500,000, and they were already up to like 399 last I checked. But since this is going to be representing not just the, you know, Megabots Corporation, but all of America, they have put together a serious like team of the best and the best when it comes to building robotics and weaponry. Because like I said, their plans are, because right now our bot is, it's basically, it's very American. It's big and covered in guns, but it's slow. It's not much, there's not a lot of finesse to it.
Yeah, I mean, it basically operates at what, 2.5 miles per hour, and it's, you know, essentially a long range paintball combat is what it's designed for currently. So,
but right now they got Howe and Howe Tech upgrading the track system. They're the builders of what was it called, the Raptor or something? It's like the fastest tracked vehicle. It's like a freaking hot rod tank. They're upgrading the track system. They've got NASA working on upgrading the safety systems and harness. IHMC Robotux, which is a DARPA contractor that won the humanoid robot challenge, they're redoing the legs, so this thing's going to be able to like take a hit and self-balance itself. Aunt Grant Imahara from Mythbusters and Industrial Light and Magic is on the project. Greg Muto and Trey Roski, which are the guys who invented BattleBots, the old show of like those guys are now part of the team. And there's some other like big Hollywood special effects and prop makers that are like, you know, working on the armor, the paint and all this stuff. And some of the concept art they've had, like I said, it's got like a big ass chainsaw on one arm. I mean, this thing is going to be freaking awesome.
I mean, it looks like a chainsaw one arm, a Gatling gun on another, and two legs plastered upon, you know, a set of tank tracks with a big-ass jet engine in the center of it. Like,
yeah, this thing is going to be just insane.
I think this thing is going to get Optimus Prime a run for his money.
I mean, it's already pretty badass, but yeah, once it gets this update before we go and fight Japan, this thing is going to be insane.
Yeah, we'll have to worry about any Decepticons.
So I will post the link in our show notes if you want to help Team America. You can join in and be a part of this. And they're offering some pretty cool prizes for donations. I mean, I can't remember the amounts and stuff, but you can actually, because they're going to take it around on like tour and stuff. And for certain donations, you're going to be able to drive it and shoot stuff with it, and or get your own little miniature toy version of it, and t-shirt, everything from t-shirts to, you know, being credited as part of the build team for certain donations. There's a lot of cool stuff they're offering to help. Plus, you're representing America, damn it. We got to beat Japan and take away the title of, you know, best robot builders. So definitely click on that link and check them out.
Yeah, the $150 prize package looks pretty sweet.
Which one is that?
That's the one you get t-shirts, posters, stickers, I mentioned on the website. You get a 3D printed miniature MK2, and let's see here, and a mega fan. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, how much is it to drive the thing? That's what I want to know.
Well, I mean, you can pilot it in the game at the $15 level, but
well, they have it where you know, get, like I said, they're going to take this thing on tour.
You know, Let's see here. Here you get to go to the unveiling. You can take a ride at $1,000 or more. yep, $1,000. So you get to hop in, pilot, and operate the gunner seat as well.
Yeah,
so you'll get to go through an obstacle course at top speed in San Francisco, feel the balance, lean into turns, its new control system, track base, and then a VIP party and collector's edition swag kit.
Yeah, so start saving your money now.
And then you can actually fire it at the $2,500 level.
It's time for me to win the lottery.
Yes.
I got some stuff I want to blow up. So I got another one for you. You ever stare deeply into someone's eyes for a long time till it gets uncomfortable?
I feel like that's what happens every time we start to podcast.
But anyway,
always uncomfortable.
An Italian scientist, Dr. Giovanni Caputo, has done an experiment for seeing what happens when you stare into someone's eyes for like 10 minutes, which that sounds almost impossible to me too, because I can't stare into somebody's eyes that long without making fun of them or doing something.
I'm more the 10-15 second eye contact, enough to get the point across, and then after that, all bets are off.
Well, apparently, if you want to hallucinate, staring into someone's eyes is a cheap way to do it. During this study, they had people, like I said, just unemotionally, just stare into each other's eyes and maintain eye contact. And people who were participants in the study reported disassociation, detachment, and full-on hallucinations. Like they were saying, the color would get distorted, faces would morph into monsters, animals, friends, even your own face, which would freak me out. Like all of a sudden, looking at myself. And they reported 2 to 4 hallucinations during that 10-minute period.
That's interesting.
They had a control group that just stared at a blank wall for 10 minutes, and they didn't report. They had the kind of the detachments, but not anything to the extreme the other participants had. So, yeah, if you stare into your loved one's eyes too long, you may start tripping balls.
That's interesting. Well, maybe that's what was going on back in the 60s and 70s,
Or what if it's like, there's these people that we all call crazy that think people are really monsters on the inside, and then there's some kind of weird camouflage. What if when we stare at someone that long, the camouflage starts burning away and we can see how they really look? So that person may actually have been a monster. Kind of like that movie, the Roddy Roddy Popper movie, like They Live or whatever it is, where he has the aliens have taken over, but everyone's convinced they don't exist because they're using some kind of like camouflage mind device, and he's the only one that can see people for who they are.
Either that or, we'll just go back to Men in Black.
Yeah.
Start reading the tabloids.
Sometimes
crazy Bigfoot is real. He's just, personified.
Sometimes crazy isn't actually that crazy.
That's interesting. I don't know. We should try that sometime. Not in each other's eyes.
No.
Other people's eyes.
That could get weird. Another thing, since we were talking about the space elevator, a German company, Space Agency PLR, is working on plans to build a space liner that's going to be like way faster than any aircraft that we currently get. Like right now, a trip from, say, London to Australia takes about 30 hours. With this, you could do it in 90 minutes, because this thing will actually launch up into the outer atmosphere and then basically cut through space really, really fast and then come back down wherever it needs to land.
Holy shit, that'd be a hell of a ride. Like, I don't know, it's something like that, though. Do you have to go through, G-force training or, go through, some kind of a physical to, get clearance to board this thing? I mean,
I don't know because this is being developed for, almost like a commercial airliner. So, it's going to go up 50 miles, so it's going to be up into into space. And, like I said, it's with no drag, any of the other stuff, you can travel a lot faster up there than you can flying through the air. So taking that 30-hour trip down to 90 minutes, I imagine it's going to be very, very expensive. So only it's going to be kind of like the Concorde was, where only the richest of the rich can do it. But
the super elite.
But eventually, as all things, it gets cheaper with time and when more competition and whatnot.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept. I don't know. I can't even begin to fathom what it'd be like to travel that fast. boggles my mind.
Another thing.
Uh-oh.
One final weird science note. Have you ever seen a Black Panther?
Nope. Can't say I have.
That's good, because they actually don't exist. There's a new study that has discovered by checking DNA that Black Panthers are not actually a species. They're a mutation of, like, the jaguar and the cheetah.
So what, they have, like, a reverse albino pigment or something, or...?
Pretty much, it's, find the actual name of it, but it's, like, instead of being an albino, their, like, melatonin levels are, like, super high. So instead of having no, melatonistic variation is what they're calling it. So instead of having no pigment, which is what you get with your albinos whenever things are, like, completely white, these creatures have an abundant of the melanin pigment that makes stuff dark. So basically they're just like a regular cheetah or jaguar, but they're almost like all black. And if you look at them closely, you can even see the spots and stuff. They're just a different shade of black on them. So all this time people have thought the Black Panther is its own species, but no, they're just a mutant version of other species that we already have.
Man, somebody gonna have to rewrite some comic book characters or something.
Yeah, Black Panther's gonna have to change his name to Black Cheetah or something.
Can we start a petition for that?
That reminds me, I saw something today. It was ADHD, the cartoon thing. They keep releasing these scientifically accurate versions of cartoons. And they did a scientifically accurate version of Pinky and the Brain that is just disturbing. You can never look at Pinky and the Brain again after watching the scientifically accurate version.
Yeah, I don't think I'd want. I mean,
you know, it's a classic disturbing
childhood memory, and I'm going to hold on to it. You're not going to ruin it for me.
The video is disturbing, and with that, we'll wrap it up and be right back.
Stay tuned.
And now it's time for all things nerdy.
And welcome to Nerd News, folks. Yeah. Round of applause. So we're going to go ahead, jump right into it. We got some, you know, movie stuff, some video game stuff, and then just some off-the-wall things. So that's what happens when we fall down the interweb holes. So up first, we got Assassin's Creed begins shooting next month. However, we've got to look at Michael Fassbender's costume for the new film. And I gotta say, you know, compared to the video games and everything else, I mean, it looks like a pretty badass costume, although I kind of see this as being a little bit of an Arrow character.
Yeah, he does look like one of Ra's al Ghul's League of Assassins guy.
Yeah, so, you know, he's going to be playing Callum Lynch. It's going to be an entirely new character that was never actually in the game. But, you know, the thing about the movie is it isn't going to be, you know, retelling any of the game's stories, but all, you know, it's going to be fixed in the same world as the game. So I'm kind of curious to check it out. You know, unfortunately, a lot of times when it comes to video game and movie spinoffs, they don't typically work out too well. I mean, it didn't work for Atari back in the 70s when they had to hide all the horrible copies of E.T.
Or the freaking Super Mario Brothers movie.
Yeah, I mean, so as successful as the Assassin's Creed franchise is, and as big of a fan as I am of the franchise, I have pretty high expectations. But then again, this kind of goes to tell me that, man, this might have the potential to suck. But, you know,
I just want a Legend of Zelda movie that looks like Game of Thrones. That's what I want.
I don't. Maybe we can petition for that. moving on to some actual video game news, Marvel Heroes, it's a free-to-play massive online game that you can download, and Carnage has joined as one of the playable characters, and nice. We have not had a Carnage game or anything to do with the character of Carnage in a long-ass time. I mean, the last time...
It was an old PS1 game or something. I vaguely remember, like, some Carnage game a long time ago.
I mean, I can remember Carnage on the Sega back in the days, but I don't know of anything more recent. If there's one as recent as PlayStation 1, I've missed it, and I need to go back and try to find a copy because, you know, Carnage was always a badass character, in my opinion. I don't know. Maybe it's just all the blood, the veins, and everything else, and the violence that he represented.
Yeah, he was like a more psycho version of Venom.
Venom, yep. And, you know, I was also another big Venom fan. So I guess that's a reason why. I don't know. I'm just curious, you know, with his psychopathic tendencies and everything else, you know, how that's going to, you know, transition into the game. So,
insane in the membrane.
Little Dr. Green Thumb there over. moving on to some movie news here. We've got Captain America, the Civil War concept art has revealed who Captain Iron Man's teams are going to be.
Yeah, we now know who it's gonna, how it's gonna split the team, or at least with the characters they've released so far.
Yep. For Captain America's team, we've got the Winter Soldier, Falcon, Hawkeye, Sharon Carter, and Ant-Man, and then the Iron Man team, we've got Black Widow, Black Panther, Vision, and War Machine.
I don't know. I think Team Tony might have. Yeah, Team Tony's got some heavy firepower.
Team Tony's got some, you know, definite heavy hitters. So.
We've got no word yet on, because I don't think Thor is supposed to be in this, and there's been rumors that Hulk may be in it, but there's no confirmation on that either. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. And also, we know Spider-Man's going to be in this movie, but they don't have him on either list, so we're just going to have to wait and see where Webhead falls in all this. But yeah.
Who the fuck is Tom Holland again?
Exactly. We don't know who he is or what team he's going to be on.
I just wonder, you know, if they're just going to have, you know, a lot of the, you know, characters kind of on the background, and then,
the comic version of Civil War, like, Spider-Man was kind of a contested person. He was kind of like at the center of a lot of it. Like I said, he may play into, you know, being recruited by both, you know, Tony and Cap's team. And
he ends up playing for both teams.
Yeah. He's a teenager. They're easily influenced. So, yeah, he goes hangs out with Cap for a while. Then Tony's like, "Hey, kid, I'll buy you alcohol." And he'd be like, "All right, cool. I'm gonna go hang out with Tony for a while.
Give you a penthouse." And
yeah. Okay, yeah, Cap. I'm gonna go hang with Tony. He's got strippers and shit. Sorry, man. My bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, given that lineup, I mean, I don't know. I think I'm gonna automatically gravitate to Team Iron Man. You know, I mean, I wouldn't mind being alongside Black Widow or Black Panther. So,
and Sharon Carter, we've not really seen a whole lot. I mean, she was in the first Captain America movie, but we haven't seen.
Yeah, really, haven't seen much of her. Yeah. You know, since then. So, I don't know. I'm curious to see how it plays out. You know, I think it's gonna be a successful movie regardless. But as more information gets released, we will keep you folks updated, because that's what we do.
And other movie news.
Yeah, and other movie news. Oh, look at there. Star Wars is back in the headlines. This time with Rogue One, we've got the cast announcement. So it looks like we're going to go back to a ground war, huh?
Yep, this is supposed to be like the Saving Private Ryan of the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, so, I don't know. It was announced at Disney's D23 Fan Expo, and, you know, we've got the entire full cast video from the United Kingdom from director Gareth Edwards that did Godzilla.
He also did American Pie back in the day, so.
Really?
Yeah, he was the writer-director of the first American Pie movie.
That's interesting to go from American Pie to Godzilla and now Star Wars. Like.
Yeah, he's got like a varied career.
So
who all are we getting in this movie?
Well, we don't know exactly who all the people are going to be playing yet, but we got Diego, Luna, we got Ben Mendelsohn. Forrest Whitaker, and then, I'm going to butcher this one, like Mads Mikkelsen, maybe?
Yeah, he's played
NBC's Hannibal.
Yeah, he's played a bad guy in a lot of movies, but so far they're saying he is not a bad guy, but that could all be bullshit because they don't want to give away who the bad guy is right off the bat. But a dude traditionally plays the villain in just about everything.
I don't know. Maybe he starts out, you know, as a good guy and slowly, you know, starts getting converted by the dark side.
He's the one that betrays the team.
Yep. So I don't
know. And also, I heard, what's his name from Firefly's in it too.
Oh, you've got Ying Wen, maybe? Let the Bullets Fly. Let's see here.
No, it's the guy who played Wash.
Oh, who was that? That was, damn it. Now you made me lose my place.
Well, where are you looking that up? Yeah, so far what we know about Rogue One is this is, like I said, a ground fighting movie, but it's going to be basically it's the first of the anthology movies that don't fit into the traditional trilogy, you know, the main storyline. This is going to be the story of the
Alan Tudyk. Golly, yeah, how did we not remember that? Like, I remember the news broke and everybody was like,
"It's been a long weekend." But yeah, it's going to be about the team that who went and captured the original Death Star plans. You know, these are the guys they reference when they're like, you know, a lot of Bothans died to bring us this information.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically why, you know, Darth Vader went and intercepted Princess Leia's ship on the diplomatic mission in the first scene of the movie.
Yeah, so this is going to be all about the commandos that go to get that, which is weird the name of the movie Rogue One, because traditionally Rogue One refers to the leader of Rogue Squadron, which was, you know, Wedge Antilles and Luke Skywalker, so... The Rogue One being the title for a ground fighting movie just sounds weird. When they first announced that title, I'm like, shit, yeah, we're gonna get a Rogue Squadron movie, but that does not look like to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically going to take place before the events of A New Hope, and there will be a departure from the saga films, and you know, there's still going to be certain elements and things that are going to tie it to the Star Wars universe. So you know, folks that aren't up on their Star Wars time frame, there's still time. A couple of interesting things that I fell down when looking at some YouTube. Going back to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, well, I stumbled across a fan film called Blood Brothers, and this is kind of a teaser trailer, but they did a badass metal soundtrack encompassing, you know, basically bebop and rocksteady. And they look absolutely awesome. I mean,
it looks like guys in rubber suits, but they look bad. I mean, freaking whatever. Bebop's like chugging a bottle of whiskey and pouring a little out for his dead homies and just shooting machine guns and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the characters and everything else, we're going to link the video to our website and all of that kind of stuff. But, you know, for the first time, you know, since like the video games, I can remember being Bebop and Rocksteady, it's like, shit, the Turtles might actually have a challenge on their hands. Like, they look that badass.
Well, I've heard that in the sequel to the live-action Turtles movie, they're saying Bebop and Rocksteady are going to be in the new live-action movie, so that should be interesting. But, yeah, that's one thing like I always hated about the second Ninja Turtles movie is they got, whatever, Tokar and Rezar, but I'm like, freaking give us Bebop and Rocksteady.
Yes.
If Shredder needs some mutants, go with the ones from the show that we already know instead of the two idiot ones they made.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if Seamus and Uncle Ruckus are close in the real movie sequel. So I don't know. That's always two characters that I wish they would elaborate on and do badass versions of. I mean, given today's special effects, even if you tied in a little bit of CGI and stuff like that, it probably wouldn't harm. But you know, for somebody to go out and develop two badass costumes would be absolutely, you know, sweet in my opinion. That's just me. And another little fun video that I ran across, for folks that are big into EDM or electric dance music, we've got Darth Punk, The Funk Awakens. And I gotta say, man, like, you know,
Death Star disco balls.
Yeah, I mean, it's Daft Punk. I mean, it's electric dance music, but at the same time, like the electronic helmets and the outfits they have. I mean, there's a badass Mando leather jacket that one of the guys is wearing, and I'm like, I want my hands on that.
Yeah, pretty much, it looks like a Daft Punk version of Darth Vader and Boba Fett.
But you know, there's a whole movie that once again we'll link to, but I'd encourage folks to check it out. I mean, it's, you know, definitely some good laughs to be had, and a couple of badass moments in there too. So, always good when you got Vader doing a dance off routine.
Damn.
Anything additional, Joe, that you've caught wind of, or anything that I haven't touched on? I mean,
not really. Other than that, Rogue One stuff's the only thing I've really seen come across my. My desk this week.
Yeah, the cigar nerds have had a busy schedule this week, so
So you have any final thoughts on the stuff we talked about today, Bad Boys, or any of our science news whatnot segments?
One, I don't think I'm going to be going to space via elevator. Two, unless something really dramatic happens with the podcast and we become multimillionaires, I don't know that we're going to be taking any jet flights through outer space. So we've talked about a lot of shit that...
Dude, we need to be the first podcast in space. We get right on that. Right. We call NASA. Like, yeah.
Hey, guys.
We want a podcast from the International Space Station. Yeah, let's make that happen.
All right, so let's start a Kickstarter campaign. It's got to be to get the cigar nerds in outer space. If nothing else, then you guys could be like, man, it's about time you shitty podcasters are out of this world.
All right, and this episode will come out Tuesday before Dragon Con. So as you heard this, you should definitely we're going to be at the cigar meetup 9:30 on Thursday at Trader Vic. So come out and see us, hang out. We'll blow some smoke, and then also there's an ESO meet and greet at 9:00 at the Hyatt bar also on Thursday. With that, check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com or the ESO Network at ESOPodcast.com. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at CigarNerdPod. Follow us on our Facebook page. Also, if you want some cool merchandise, you can check out our Zazzle store, which is Zazzle.com/CigarNerdsPodcast, or get your Real Men Smoke Cigar shirts from RealMenSmokeCigars.com/CigarNerds. And with that, we ride together, we die together, Cigar Nerds for life. Peace! And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.